Don't touch that dial if you want to live. Welcome to Heartland Supernatural from MWR, your place for all the spine-tingling, horror-inducing, nail-biting fun here in the heart of the Midwest. I'm your honorable horror host, Denver Bauman, and I'm pleased to spend a sleepless night with you, the faithful listeners. Today, we have a mind-bending episode. Is our perception of reality accurate? Are the experiences that we have day-to-day our own? Is our soul, if it even exists, tethered to this specific body? Or has it been around for much longer? Today, a listener has sent in their own story about their change in reality. This is a special episode, so let's not waste any time and jump right in. Welcome back, listeners. Our story today focuses on our perception of our minds and our bodies. This story comes to us today from listener Ariadne, no last name given. She writes the following. As a therapist, I am the daily recipient of the many idiosyncrasies, beliefs, and contradictions of the human species. I am unable to specify, as it would breach agreements, but not a day goes by when I am not astounded by the bizarre ideas people will believe. The human brain has a unique ability to rationalize practically anything, especially to convince ourselves we are better than the rest. We will go through hoops to remove responsibility for the mountain of mistakes we have created. Springing from that thought, we will do anything to feel special. We rebel at feeling like another salmon flowing upstream among the hordes of fish that look identical to ourselves. We want to believe that our goal, at the end of the stream, is different, and too often, we are reminded that we are all the same, to an extent. We try to fix that, often with our bodies. We wake up each day and choose an outfit that will set us apart from everyone else, no matter how outlandish and, in some cases, no matter how mundane. We get tattoos, hoping to make our skin as unique an entity as possible. We post on social media about how incredible and rare our lives are. We find comfort in believing that our body is unique, and that this fleshly coil with its problems, diseases, and quirks is ours, and ours alone. It's a comforting thought. However, I have the deplorable knowledge that my body, my life, has not been singular. I have had others. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I must first start at when I discovered my past. My true past, that is. It began during a rather dull therapy session. The patient was listing off their many perceived problems as they had done about a dozen times prior. I usually barely speak during sessions. I find that the presence of my voice often gets in the way of finding the root problem. Instead, I prefer to let the patient speak, as they will often find what they are seeking themselves if they continue to dig. Sometimes, patients are not looking for a fix. They just need someone to listen. I'm a great listener. I get paid to do it. But I found that with this patient, however, it was hard to concentrate. I found my mind wandering. I quickly disregarded any visions I would see as simple daydreams. It would have been foolish to consider them anything more. I had never had a daydream as vivid and as tangible as that one. I had a different body. I looked down, and the hands I knew so well were replaced by digits completely new. Yet, I still knew them. The clothes were not mine. I had never worn them before, but they felt perfect at the same time. She was a couple years younger, about 21. Her name was Hera. She was on her way to a birthday party set up by her friends. It was the early 80s. She loved parties, something I never went to. She adored animals. She was training to be a veterinarian. And while I never disliked animals, I was always more inclined toward the human variety. She was deeply insecure about her hair, almost always hiding it under a hat, something that was ridiculous and false, yet entirely in line with the crazy things we believe about ourselves. I intuitively knew all of this about her, as if I had been her my entire life. The dichotomy of self I was now feeling was battling. Hers won in the end. And I found myself living her life as if it had always been that way. I wasn't simply a passenger watching a movie. I was her. I had always been Hera Michaels, from 124 Cherokee Lane, Rockford, Illinois. I arrived at the bar, where my friends from school greeted me. I knew all their faces, all the secrets they had confided in me, and the grievances between them. It was the best party I had ever attended. I let loose in a way that Ariadne almost never did. It was exhilarating to be someone other than myself for an evening. It was around 2 a.m. when we finally called it a night. I was walking home, which was just a few blocks away, stumbling from the drinks. After a while, I realized I was going in the wrong direction. Chuckling at myself for the mistake, I reset my course. I noticed a tall man with an angular face and a wide-brimmed hat. He nodded towards me and lit a cigarette. The light illuminated his eyes, dark and calculating. He called out to me, "Careful where you go out tonight, miss. Don't want to get lost." I mumbled something back and continued walking. You learn quickly to just keep walking in the city. The man disappeared into the night behind me, but the smell of the cigarette lingered long after he'd gone. The streets did not feel right, which was odd. I'd been walking these streets for years, but for some reason, none of the buildings made sense. I quickly attributed it to the alcohol and tried to get my bearings. I sat on the curb and waited for everything to make sense. My head was down, still dizzy, when two shoes entered my vision. Black and ragged, the shoes of a man who didn't care if they looked bad or didn't have the money to do anything about it. I heard a voice. I glanced up to snap a frustrated, "What?" and saw the skinniest man I'd ever seen. He was wearing a patched-together brown suit, the sleeves approximately 10 inches too short, and the top of the suit revealed a neck as small as my wrists, upon which an almost perfectly round face sat. He was smiling at me, teeth too round, like an infant's, surprisingly white. The drink in my system kept me from screaming, made me feel ashamed. Who was I to judge someone's appearance? But he still seemed odd. He bent down, his legs thin and twig-like, all proportions feeling humanoid but off. He asked again, emotionlessly, "Do you need help?" His voice was mumbled, slurred, as if forming human words was new. He must have also been drunk. I, Ariadne, told Hera to say no. My mind separating suddenly from itself as I became a passenger to the events. Hera, myself, said yes. "Please help me. I'm lost." The thing smiled again, placing a long-fingered, bony hand on her shoulder. The primal instinct to scream went off, but no noise came out of Hera. Her body was frozen both in fear and drink, its head tilted to the side, like a dog eyeing a new meat.
"Don't worry. You will have a new home soon."
The memory went black, replaced by the pain of burning, the immense heat of existence being snuffed out in a blazing fire. I screamed, but suddenly I was back in my office, my patient looking at me as my scream was replaced by the sound of my alarm sitting on the table, ringing. The patient left after I made some simple suggestions. I was content to accept that the vision was merely a daydream, This perceived safety was shattered when I had the second vision. Well, it looks like this is only the beginning, listeners. What happened in Ariadne's second vision? We'll find out right after these commercials from our sponsors. Stay tuned.
Okay. We've had some bizarre ones recently. Whoever is vetting these needs a raise. Felix, do we have any more information on Ariadne? I'm just interested. I've been thinking about going to therapy. I'm aware. Yeah, she sees things, but so do...
Anyway, therapy could help me with some stuff. I've been working too hard. Speaking of working too hard, you've been spending a lot of evenings here. What's that about? You're looking for a promotion? Trying to impress people? Anyway, we should get back to work.
All right. Let's do this.
Welcome back, horror listeners. We continue the statement by Ariadne as she delves into the strange visions. Her statement continues now.
The second vision, daydream, hallucination, whatever you want to call it, occurred a few weeks later. This time, thankfully, not during a therapy session. I was alone in my apartment, making dinner, when it started. I glanced down, expecting to see the stovetop, but was instead greeted with the sight of sitting in a pew. I noticed the telltale signs of a small church in the Midwest. Beige walls, simple tapestries, a few hazy windows. I heard someone speaking and looked up. The pastor was young, younger than I expected. Jet black hair, slightly curly. He was thin, not unattractive. Once more, the memories of another life flooded into my consciousness. This time, I didn't fight it. I was trained to delve into the psyche of my patients. So naturally, I wished to do the same for myself. Her name was Penelope. Slightly older, nearing 30 years. I, Ariadne, am not religious. I focus on the human mind, and anything beyond that is not my concern. Penelope, however, was. Ever since her father died about 10 years prior, she found comfort in the hymns, the order, and the hope that she would see him again someday. I wasn't used to that feeling, either. I was glad I wasn't going to see my father again. He certainly hadn't cared for me or my mother when he was alive. Before long, I was her, Penelope, fully and willingly. Her life wasn't simple. She worked as a secretary for, well, the only major company in her small town, Popcorn. The factory sat on the outskirts of the west side of town. It was growing almost every year. It was amazing to hear that her work was affecting the lives of people far from her front door. It made the long days worth it. She was a mother of two, to add to the busyness. And she was single, an oddity for the American dream of the 50s heartland. Her husband had fathered the first child, but he had died. A terrible car accident had taken his life 2 years prior. She had always said her second child was from him, but the math didn't add up. Most people didn't bother to correct her. She knew the truth. And as I looked up at the pastor, I had a sudden feeling wash over me. Love is the most inexplicable, yet vital human emotion. I, Ariadne, had loved before, but not like this. This was a fever. A churning in the heart for another human being that saved me from the worst moments of my life. It was as close to reverence as I'd ever known. The Ariadne side of my brain was frightened, but the Penelope side was elated. The sermon ended, and I found myself waiting near one of the windows, admiring the art. It was a depiction of the Last Supper. Not the famous one, but still pleasant enough. All the disciples sitting around in a circle while Jesus sat and watched.
I heard the voice I was longing to hear behind me. What did you think of the sermon? He was smiling. Matt Holdens, pastor of this small community for about 5 years now. He gestured to his office and I happily followed him. We sat and talked about everything. Each other, nothing. Until the evening progressed, we weren't ready to tell the world about us. I was just happy to be in his presence. He seemed more solemn today, more lost in thought. He kept looking down at the floor and fidgeting. What's wrong? I gently squeezed his hand. Nothing. Nothing I haven't dealt with before. He looked up at me, smiled, and then asked, How are you feeling? He had been more worried about me lately. Never better. These last few months with you have been the best in the world. He shook his head and chuckled. Not emotionally, my dear. I mean physically. I tilted my head and sighed. The last few months have been odd. I felt guilty. I shouldn't have said anything. How so? He asked. I looked down. Nothing. It's stupid. He placed his hands on my face and looked at me. I felt his love. I saw it in his eyes. Come with me. We walked down to the basement. It looked remarkably like the chapel, except darker and not as ornate. For some reason, there were stained glass windows down here, except a dim red light was emanating from them, from somewhere. You've been feeling exhausted, haven't you? Just more tired. Every day. It just takes a little more effort to get out of bed. It's just winter fatigue. Nothing out of the ordinary. He slowly nodded. He was facing away from me. His next words came more ragged. It always starts like this. I took a step towards him. What does? He said nothing, just a long sigh. I noticed that the windows were beginning to shine with a brighter light. I looked at them and noticed the contents had changed. Darker, inhuman shapes sitting in a circle. A person screaming in pain on the ground while 13 individuals stood around. Another window depicted bodies burning and a face in the flames laughing. Another depicted the sight of a large being slumbering in a cave, waiting for something. I looked back at Matt. What are these? Too shocked to think of anything else. He turned, the creases on his face more prominent in the red light, showing his despair. I did love you. I do. That was my mistake. I pleaded with him to explain to me what was happening. He just shook his head. Don't try to fight it. Behind him, I saw red, glowing eyes in the shadows beyond the light. They looked at me with hunger. I screamed, and everything went black. I once again returned to myself. I was Ariadne. I was in my kitchen, and my food was burning. The scream of pain melded into the chirp of my fire alarm. I quickly put out the fire and cleared the smoke, all the while thinking of this second vision. These weren't daydreams. They were more than that. What? I had not yet decided. Vision 3 came a few days later. Well, that was terrifying, listeners. I would say more, but the story is not over yet, and we're short on time. I wonder what happens in Vision 3. Let's find out right after these messages. Sheesh. Okay, whoever decided on this story, genius. This stuff is creepy. This was your suggestion, Felix? Nice. Good job, man. You found it in the pile of trash? I mean, whoever wanted to trash this probably didn't actually read it. This is gold. I'm actually wondering where this second vision took place. I remember a popcorn factory in a town near me when I was growing up. No, you don't have to look into it, Felix. I'm just curious. You've done enough work. You deserve a break. Speaking of work, we should get back to this. Welcome back, listeners. We continue the terrible visionary journey of Ariadne as her third vision unfolds. I was in bed. It was early in the morning. I realize I could have easily dreamed this next one, but again, it felt too real. I was younger this time, barely a teenager. Her name was Circe, and childlike wonder filled me. Suddenly, my whole outlook on the world shifted. What adventures would I find if I climbed that tree? What mysteries lay under that peculiar rock? What animals wandered around just beyond that hill? I always kept my blonde hair tied up to keep it out of my face so I could have the best chance of seeing every little thing. I was in the woods, hopping from stone to stone on a small creek. It was the year 1870, or thereabouts. I was met with the most extraordinary sight of all, a cave. I smiled and sprinted towards it, the hem of the dress getting caked in mud. Before I reached the mouth, though, I noticed a man sitting on a rock beside it. He wore a wide-brimmed hat and had a long coat on, even though it was warm. He glanced up at me, and I noticed his oddly angular face. His dark eyes sparkled.
"And what would your name be?"
I smiled and walked up to him with ignorant, fearless stupidity. I sat on a rock beside him.
"Circe," I beamed.
"A very pretty name. And what are you doing here?"
I began a long-winded explanation of how I was trying to reclaim my kingdom and needed a magic toadstool to do it. The man just chuckled and occasionally looked at the cave opening as I talked. I finished my story by saying,
"I believe my toadstool is in that cave."
The man stood suddenly.
"No, I don't believe so."
"Why is that?"
"Because I've personally delved all through that cave, and I can tell you with great certainty that there is no magic toadstool in there."
This made me frown, but I quickly perked up.
"Do you know where it might be?"
I heard a sound coming from the cave. It was long and changed pitch as it rose. I had never heard anything like it before. The man lowered his head slightly, but then looked at me and noticed that I was more confused than anything. He chuckled.
"Have you heard the legend of the Wailing Cave?"
To which I shook my head. He began a long, probably improvised story that nonetheless left me enraptured. He finished the tale.
"Now, you should run along."
I looked up and noticed that it was getting rather late, and I still had chores to do. My quest for the toadstool would have to wait. I stood up and noticed that my body was very tired. I thanked the man for the story and began to find my way home. I noticed another man walk out of the cave. "Not her?" the man asked. The man with the hat looked at him and replied,
"No, too young. Not nearly afraid enough."
To which the other only shrugged and went back into the cave. Suddenly, the man with the hat disappeared. The entire walk back, I felt eyes watching me. I investigated the brush several times on my way back, but never saw anything. I swore I heard someone whispering next to me, telling something to stand down. I made it back home safely, thrilled after the long quest, and I saw my mother crying. She looked up at me, tears staining her face. I didn't know how to respond, so I just ran and hugged her. I didn't say anything. My father had disappeared that day while on his way back from a business trip. His car had been found near the woods. No trace of him except for a torn piece of clothing. The car was still on. Footprints were found leading away from the car, but vanished. I would never see him again. The vision ended, and I was left by myself in my room, staring up at the ceiling, almost late for work. The only horrific tragedy this time was one that the human species has been trying to reconcile, the death of a loved one. I do not claim to understand these visions. I do not wish to acknowledge the possibility of psychic abilities. I know what I saw, and that is enough. I do not know what to believe. I was these people. Not merely for a single vision, but for a lifetime. All these people I had seen were me. We shared the same soul or whatever essence connected our minds through time and space. We shared the same body matter. My mind is not my own. It has formed the lives of several people before me. I am the byproduct of centuries of life and death. What is most terrifying, though, is that all of them have experienced true horrors. Things that should not exist to my rational, scientific mind. After these visions, they have all left their traces in me. I feel love more fiercely. I see more wonderful things as though through the eyes of a child. So those are my visions. I do not know when it will finally be my turn to see something terrifying. But for now, I am enjoying life while I still have it.
Well, there you have it, listeners. 3 terrifying stories from the same person. What does it mean?
Well, I'll leave that up to you. The clock says we're out of time.
Join us next time as we delve more into these themes with stories from others about their own perception of uniqueness in this large world. This has been Heartland Supernatural. Thank you for listening. Stay scary.
The Beating Heartland was written and performed by Denver Bauman. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on whatever streaming platform you are using. Follow us online at The Beating Heartland. Thank you for listening.